This is Craig Ellencourt, and you're listening to the Pain is the Pits podcast on the Health Styles Network. First of course, Happy New Year to everybody, and Dr. Peter Kachajian, our guest today. Happy New Year, Pete. How are you?
Happy New Year, Craig, everybody. Hope this is a big year for us, so we're going to move into 2017.
That's right, and the more things change, the more they stay the same, of course, and one of the things that is a pretty regular common occurrence for you in your pain management practice is workers' compensation patients, correct?
Yeah. Lots of different insurances. You have Medicare, you have private, you have no-fault motor vehicle. And as you just mentioned, maybe 25% or more of our practice here in Suffolk County, Long Island, is workers' compensation cases.
So
we do a lot of neck and back, Craig.
Sure, absolutely. So someone's injured on the job, goes through workers' compensation, comes to see you for pain management. How does it work? Take us through the process.
Let's say they're an electrician and they're twisting and turning. They fall off a ladder. They hurt their back. They complain to the supervisor, and the supervisor does the sends them for the evaluation. They say, hey, look, neurologically you're okay, but you're a little sore. You have some tenderness here. Start some anti-inflammatories. You're going to take a day off or two. You try to get back, but if you still have persistent pain, they're going to send you for another evaluation, a more comprehensive one. You may, after history and physical exam, you may have some tests. You may have, my back's killing me, and you may have some spasms on examination, and they might get an MRI, and you might have a herniation. And now, you have an L4-5 lumbar herniation. It's pressing into nerves. You're starting to have sciatica. And if you're going to do the anti-inflammatories and do a month of two or of rehabilitation with physical therapy, and if you're out this whole time and you're trying to get back to work and you need a specialty injection like an epidural, they would come to an anesthesiology interventionalist like myself. And then we would take it from there.
So they would show up to you with essentially an outline that has been put together after an independent evaluation from a physician.
Right.
The state, in most cases, the state-run workers' compensation board then creates this, essentially an implementation plan.
It's like a guideline. You're allowed so much, so many pills, so much injections, so much therapies.
And
when to go for surgery. They give you a guideline.
And in general, on average, how often, if you see somebody, does what they've been given as their implementation plan look like something that is right? I mean, more or less? I mean, how flexible are you in terms of what
Right.
You can
we
do?
See them because we're the interventionalists, so we're going to see them, after they've been into it for a week or two or a month or two, typically. They're doing conservative care initially, especially a herniated disc in the spine. If there's not a neurologic compromise, if you're not rushing off to surgery because you can't move your feet, God forbid. We're seeing them, after they're conservative, after they tried different medications, muscle relaxants, anti-inflammatories, after the chiropractic care, or in the middle of it, or after their physical therapy, or in the middle of it, and it's just, they're just trying to get back to work. They're still not getting better with conservative care after a month or two, or even three, and then it's time. Hey, wait a minute, maybe an epidural injection can help speed up and start curing more inflammation in the spine. So injection management starts to come into play, and the classic epidural steroid injection by, say, New York State Board compensation allows three a year. So, three a year, you can do them close if the patient needs it. You can space them out if they continue to have flares. It depends, but say, we talked about guidelines. So for interventional management, for an epidural steroid, for a herniated disc, it's three a year.
Would a patient necessarily, would workers' comp send a patient to you if epidural steroid injections were not on their implementation plan?
Well, they are for herniated disc, but if it was facet pain or a muscle spasm pain, depending on the injury, especially when it comes to low back, and when you see an interventionalist, they allow so much care. Like if you had muscle spasms, they would allow, say, 6 trigger points a year. But if you needed more, there's an appeal process. If it was sacroiliac joint injections, 3 a year. Facet injections, 3 a year. Epidurals, 3 a year. But if you had to burn nerves for pain control, especially for joints, called radiofrequency, and we've talked about different procedures on our podcasts, maybe once a year. Or you could appeal for twice a year if you needed it. But you need strong arguments.
So if
they need to get better.
So for epidural steroid injections, generally speaking, workers' comp would allow for three a year.
Right.
Your average patient that's not on workers' comp, tell them what, can they have more than that?
Well, like I said, different insurances cover different amounts. Medicare may be four a year. Other private insurance may be five or six a year.
So if a workers' compensation patient comes in and they're limited to three a year, but it's clear either to you and or the patient that they need more.
Right.
What can they do?
Well, there's an appeal process, right? So if you've done, say, three in 8 months and they're helping the patient, you know, more than 50% and just not lasting and you're still deriving a benefit, they're still flaring, you still think there's inflammation there, you could appeal, say, for a fourth in that year. And you go through the process, you write a letter of medical necessity. And a lot of times the patient's legal team needs to go before the court and try to get an appeal authorized so that we can do an additional injection. But you got to have strong arguments. It's got to help the patient. Can't have a lot of side effects. It's part of an integrative system, right? They got to be working real hard. We talk about the integrative PITS. Pain is the PITS system. It's got to be part of their therapy, which is number one priority. Mind and body, they have to keep working hard. They're going to be proactive. And we're going to get back to this, right? They're going to be proactive in their care. And it's got to be in combination with anti-inflammatories and or muscle relaxants or nerve pills if they have nerve pain, like the Neurontins and Lyricas and Baltas, right? So integrative and injections. But guess what? If even injections aren't working, you got to move forward maybe to a surgical evaluation. And then you have to go see a spine surgeon to see if they can be fixed that way. Especially if they're trying to get back to work, right? So if they're trying to get back to work, then we have to push that protocol as hard as we can, because the longer they're out of work, the longer they're going to stay out of work by statistics. Especially a motivated patient that wants to get back. If you're not a motivated patient and there's some secondary gain there, and we can talk about this, and they're going the disability route, that's a whole nother can of worms.
And we've talked a little bit about this earlier today before this podcast. And in the past, we've talked about this, that there are those patients that just are on workers' comp to get out of work. And there's not a whole lot that you can do about it. But if you notice it.
Yeah, you can just encourage the patients. Guys, do you want to get back to work? What's going on with your other providers? You know, what's going on with your physical therapist? If you have a rehab doctor, your orthopedic doctor, your spine surgeon, what's going on with your chiropractic? How likely is it for you to get back based on your injuries? A motivated patient will get there, but they'll get there sooner than later. But we do treat the pain. We take the patient for what they have, right? So pain is so subjective. We're trying to help them regardless of whether they go back to work or not as part of their pain team following the compensation guidelines, right? There's not endless money here, right? All insurances don't have endless money. Just treat the patient. You've got to see progress.
Now what, about 25% of your patients are workers' compensation cases. What percentage of that do you at some point are writing for medical necessity to appeal for something
greater? Not a lot. You know, a lot of the pain is the PITS program patients. Our program, 90% are fitting the guidelines of compensation and other insurances. You know, they're giving us leeway for medications, even opioid medications if we need them short term or even longer term. There's an appeal process if you have to use more than, say, 100 milli equivalent morphine milligram dosings. We've talked about MEDs, morphine equivalent dosings in narcotics and the big opiate crisis before. But they give us leeway for medications, for so much therapy, injections. But, you know, 10% might need that extra injection that we just mentioned. So maybe, 1 in 10 need a medical necessity, or for something even outside the guidelines, right? We've talked about RSD patients, the complex regional pain syndrome patients, injuries to the hand and feet. And if they're doing injections, the sympathetic blocks, we've done Facebook Live on sympathetic blocks. If they're doing the therapies and the medications and just a little bit, you know, persistent pain is keeping them from going back to work, there's hyperbaric. And we've done podcasts on hyperbaric oxygen therapy for RSD patients. And believe it or not, compensation is being better and better about authorizing workers' compensation, authorizing hyperbaric medicine, which is not in their guidelines.
Really? And other complementary
care. Because they're seeing good
care.
Results. Other complementary care, you would hope, but that's like other insurances. You know, how much are they paying for Reiki, right. Mineral supplements, yoga, Pilates? It'd be wonderful if they were.
Well, I would think of hyperbaric oxygen therapy as equivalent to some of those complementary care techniques, but they're
well,
you're
it's
saying
oxygen. I'm
there's
putting
enough.
that more into the medical medication. You know, I would put hyperbarics in medication management. You're using oxygen. Oxygen is like a medication. You know, I mean, there's plenty of science and studies there for the bends. You know, deep sea divers, necrotic, gangrene limbs. Well-established medical necessity for hyperbaric. It's just not for RSD and chronic pain. Workers' compensation is saying yes to these things, and they're seeing results. We're seeing results as pain practitioners. You know, so sometimes you have to go outside the guidelines.
So, are you seeing? So again, let's get into those numbers. So, 25% of your patients,
right?
Workers' comp. About 10% of those you've had to write some sort
of maybe one in ten
letter.
Because we're seeing them long term.
What's the general success of those when you?
Well, you got to be persistent. Compensation. You know, a lot of times if they're dragging, the board is being slow. If the legal team for the patient wants to speed it up, to go before the judge. Remember. Compensation is a legal document with a medical necessity piece written in. So it's primarily, if you have to go right before the judge and have the judge make your decision, more times than not, if it makes some sense medically and it makes sense in terms of their care plan, they'll favor inside of the they'll favor on the side of the patient, even if you have to go to the judge. But sometimes compensation, you know, the board is realistic and they're seeing certain pain states and their experience, and they're saying, hey, you know, we've seen other cases like this, and I'm not going to make you go to court. We're going to authorize it. So sometimes it's 50-50. Whether you have to go to court or not to get outside your guideline.
And I'm
but
sure
even that, it's only 10%.
Right. And you know, you are dealing strictly with the New York State Board, and obviously
right.
it's going to vary from state to state. So
yes.
curious to see how that works and from state to state. But
it is a
process. You did mention opioids earlier.
Right.
What is the, I mean, obviously we've talked about and dealt with a lot the opioid crisis on Long Island and in America as a whole, and the CDC guidelines from last year that are meant to encouraging lower dosaging. Is that something you're seeing as well with workers' comp?
Yeah, sure, because, you know, safety is safety. We've had a long history of using opioids safely and correctly, but it's all the negatives and some recent research and, of course, gateway stuff where opiates chronically, if changes patients' mentality, can lead to stronger drugs like heroin and cocaine, and is a problem. It's a big problem, and but... You know, we've used them so successfully, especially in chronic pain management, where the experts have been able to watch their patients, I guess, more successfully than, say, primary care. Compensation in the 2014 guidelines for New York State, for example, and again, this is a national broadcast, so you could check your individual states, it's less than 100 milligrams morphine equivalent for narcotic. But again, if you have a reason to go above this from a professional pain management consultation standpoint, the board in certain cases will allow you to go above it. But there's always the push to be less because of the negatives of opiates on the body anyway. And you know, there's a certain percentage of patients by statistics, the higher you go on morphine equivalents, the higher the chance of respiratory depression and having an adverse event. These are statistics,
right.
Especially when combined with those benzodiazepines, right, the Valiums and Xanaxes, and alcohol. So you have to be careful no matter what you're doing. And obviously, less is better, especially when it comes to chronic opioids, but not all patients can do it. And a lot of patients who have chronic persistent pain and are working, right? I'm not even talking about disabled. If they need a chronic opioid to continue their work and it being safe, I don't see any reason why we can't do that.
But you don't think that workers' compensation patients are staying on workers' comp for the purpose of getting opioids?
No, I don't see that is coming through on my patients. But, you know, I mean, a certain percentage really don't like their jobs. So it all depends on the patient's psychological makeup, believe it or not, and, of course, very much so the degree of their injury, whether they eventually want to get back. But if you're going beyond a year, very few people go back to work beyond a year. I've had some, and
yeah.
I'm very proud of them, and I keep teasing them. Hey, you won the bet. You went back to work after a year, so
well, thinking
it's
about,
very refreshing to see that.
Absolutely, and you know, speaking about and speaking to listeners who might be on workers' comp and are legitimately trying and wanting to get back to work and get better. I guess the key is, as you said earlier, being proactive. And the interesting part about that, that people might forget about if they're on workers' compensation, one thing that you talk about with Pain is the Pits is it starts with what you can do on your own before or without accessing the professionals.
Right.
And that's not on the workers' compensation implementation plan.
Now, right. Being proactive, well, that's an unwritten guideline.
Well,
from within. You have to take care of yourself.
Yes, it's unwritten, but I mean, the idea that stretching every day at home is going to help you if you have lower back pain, you know, is something that you need to do.
Yeah, and the occupational specialty talks about, you know, lifting ergonomically in the workplace, OSHA regulation for certain noises and other restrictions in workplaces. There are the groups that are teaching occupational safety and health, but you eventually got to be proactive. Hey, you work for UPS. Hello, you're lifting tons of boxes, heavy, awkward. You're at risk of low back. So you're going to have to learn proactively, right? They're going to teach you. They're going to say, hey, guys, if you work for UPS and you're lifting heavy boxes, this is the way to lift. The safety belts and how to pace yourself and how to bend and lift. You have to learn that. But other jobs is not necessarily so straightforward, like you're saying. So proactive is the way to go.
Proactive, I guess, is the key takeaway here. That's both for doing things that are not on your implementation guideline list that you can do at home and on your own, as well as being proactive to empower yourself, working with your doctors, with your pain management specialist, if you think there's more that needs to be appealed for to
sure.
help you in your plan.
And guidelines change. There have been several guideline changes for the last 20 years. The last one was 2014 in New York, but they expanded psychological services, which was nice. You know, and if you need extended opioids, they're a little bit better on that. But if they could extend it to even more integrative care to try to get even more patients back without busting the budget, that would be wonderful as well.
Well, certainly hope that is the case for 2017 and beyond.
Of course. It's a new year, America.
Hope this has been helpful to our listeners who are both workers' compensation patients and who are not. But we'll talk more about it as we go on. Everybody can obviously check out the podcast as well as other great information on healthstylesnetwork.com. For Pain is the Pits, this is Craig Ellenport, Dr. Peter Kachajian. Pete, thanks for joining us as always.
This has been excellent. And to all our American workers, be safe and Happy New Year.
Take care.